Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Monday, April 5th. Before we begin work, will you please call the roll?
Representative Levy.
Might be muted. Or Representative Levy may be testifying right this minute, excused.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh is here via video.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith is here by video.
Representative Valderrama.
Representative Valderrama present by video.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham is present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke present by video.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson present by video. Thank you. We have two items on our agenda for today. We're going to do them in the order in which the agenda was printed. The first item is an informational meeting. Some of you have known about my interest in the earned income tax credit and increasing the utilization of the EITC. I've been interested in this for many, many years. We've heard about it often, and we heard about it recently, for example, in a meeting on our tax system. So I'm very happy that we have a list of presenters to talk to us today about their experience and their interests in utilization of the EITC. LRO, do you have an introduction for this?
We don't, Madam Chair. I think you just provided that. So.
Okay. Let's start with the first speaker, and I want to let everybody know that I've planned this hearing to last roughly an hour. Well, now a little less than an hour. We're going to hear from two agencies. They will have roughly 5 to 7 minutes each to talk to us about their work in this area, their work and their interests or recommendations. After that, we have several other presenters, and they will be speaking for up to 5 minutes each per organization. The first is Department of Revenue.
Great. Hi, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Betsy Eimholt, and I serve as Director of the Oregon Department of Revenue. Thanks for having me today to talk about the utilization of the earned income tax credit in Oregon. According to the most recent IRS data, Oregon is below the national average in EITC utilization. The national average is 78%, and Oregon sits at 73%. We have work to do. The most important barrier to consider related to EITC participation is that in order for people to receive the credit, they need to file a tax return. At least that's how our system is set up today. To increase tax filing, the IRS and states across the country work in partnership with coalition partners to increase awareness through outreach efforts to people potentially eligible for the EITC. The IRS has extensive outreach and education efforts aimed at both increasing EITC participation and ensuring that taxpayers and preparers understand the eligibility requirements. For taxpayers, the IRS provides complete information on the EITC in multiple languages on its website, including the EITC Assistant, which is an interactive tool to help taxpayers determine if they are eligible for the credit, and information about how to help with filing a return. Additionally, the IRS sends notices to some taxpayers who may be eligible for the EITC and filed a return but did not claim the credit. The IRS also provides resources to community organizations, employers, government agencies, and tax preparers in order to increase participation. Resources include marketing materials, best practices, EITC Awareness Day information, and training modules for preparers. In Oregon, the Oregon Department of Revenue participates in an interagency work group that's composed of representatives from the Oregon Department of Human Services, the Oregon Health Authority, Oregon Housing and Community Services, the Department of Consumer and Business Services, the State Library, and the Employment Department. The goal of the work group is to work toward increasing awareness and accesses to resources related to EITC. The group meets every other week throughout filing season, which we're in right now. And actually, the filing season, as you know, has been extended to May 17th. The group works to identify ways to broaden outreach, especially to underserved populations. Some of this year's efforts that the DOR has participated in include developing shared materials for our joint outreach efforts. We've participated in a multi-agency social media campaign to remind people of the benefits of EITC and the opportunities to apply. And then DOR has posted on our social media channels about 20 times so far this tax season, and the social media channels that we use are LinkedIn and Twitter. We also participated in a joint news release with the Oregon Department of Human Services on EITC Awareness Day, which is January 29th. The Department of Revenue also provides EITC data through our Personal Income Tax Statistic Annual Report, and that can be found on our website. This is all to say that revenue agencies can be helpful. However, it's just my own personal opinion that we, whether it's the IRS or DOR, we're never going to be the best messenger for our target audience, but that's no excuse not to do more. The role that the department can play is in facilitating the provision of tax preparation services for those who need help filing. People need access to preparation services in their communities from organizations that they trust and in languages that they're comfortable with. These are the trusted messengers that people need to hear from. DOR can serve as a partner and as a convener for this type of work, providing that help is our best way to grow participation. And later today, I'll talk more specifically about that when you have your hearing on House Bill 3373. My colleagues on the panel can share more with you about the outreach that's underway. Thanks for letting me have some time today on your calendar.
Thank you very much for joining us. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Einhold, thank you for being here. Sounds like our utilization rate's about 3 out of 4 who are eligible, or you said 73%. Okay. I'm just wondering what the utilization rate is on other tax credits. Is it that high? Is it much higher? I know that's kind of a broad question, but if you had a sense of where the EITC fits along with other tax credits that are available to Oregonians.
Madam Chair, Representative Reschke, this particular set of data is actually provided by the IRS. I don't know if the IRS provides it on other credits. We can find that out. What I can tell you is that these are estimates. I think it's hard to somewhat pin it down because what is hard to know is who's eligible. It's somewhat hard to know that. But I think what's important to know is that there is headroom, right? There's headroom, whether it's 1% or 5%, there's room here. And so that's really, for me, when I look at it, that's really the takeaway is if you compare us to other states, we're at the bottom. And there's room to grow, but I can't find out to answer your specific question, if they do this for other credits, I don't know, but we can find that out.
Thank you. Madam Chair, may I have a quick follow-up?
Sure.
Thank you very much. I guess my other question is, a lot of people file their taxes with software now. Does the software not prompt somebody to take advantage of this tax credit if they're eligible?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Reschke. The problem really, from what I understand, is not people filing and not getting the credit. That's a very, very small issue. The real issue is people not filing at all. If they file, more than likely they're going to be able to get the credit because of exactly what you're talking about. But if they don't file, then we have a kink in the system, as shall we say.
Very good. Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Einhold.
Sure. A long time ago when I was working on this issue, it took some arm twisting, but this is many years ago. Took some arm twisting, but finally Department of Revenue did post something about EITC on the agency's website. Now it's much more prominent. I think it would be helpful if you or your staff could provide to the committee, not right this minute, but within the next few days, if you could provide us with screenshots of where EITC is mentioned, how someone could find out about it from your website, and also to show the committee how easy or not easy it is to find the information on how to get free tax assistance. But of course, as you mentioned, Ms. Imhold, the agency isn't really necessarily the best messenger for this. I've been arguing for a number of years that we need to find people where they are, where they're interacting with other agencies, where they're going for help, or where they're paying their utility bill, for example, when the kids are at school, when they're going for food assistance, for example, at a food pantry. There are so many other places where people interact with other organizations or other community groups, and information, it's more likely we'll get to them where they already are. As I've joked with your predecessor, people don't wake up in the morning saying, I think I'll check out the Department of Revenue's website and see what they have for me today. It just doesn't happen like that.
Madam Chair, if I may, I'm happy to provide the screenshots. And one more thing is a law that you actually passed recently. Now the EITC information is also required on all W-2s. So that's a very specific place where when people go to file, if they do go to file, that information is right there on their W-2 when they pull that out to compute their filing. So that's a piece that you all did that is now available for folks.
Great. That's a big help. Rep. Reschke, did you have your hand up again? If there are no other, Rep. Pham. And then we're going to move to DHS.
Thank you so much, Chair Nathanson, and Ms. Imhold, thank you so much for your information. Can you talk about the impacts of COVID-19 on some of the agency outreach? I wonder if, you know, with people not gathering in person, if some of the outreach around the EITC has been affected, and how your agencies have been able to adapt.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Pham. I can say that it affected ours that I'm aware of. But what I do know for sure is that it has affected the free tax help that is available in community. That's been significantly reduced. Some organizations have actually closed their tax clinics. So I do expect that we'll see a reduction in assistance due to that loss of service. And that's a direct impact because of COVID-19.
And we're going to hear a lot more about that in just a couple of minutes, I think. Thank you. Next, I'd like to hear from Department of Human Services.
Good afternoon, Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. Hopefully you guys can see me, but for the record.
See you, great.
For the record, my name is Dan Hahn, and I am the director of the Self-Sufficiency Program at the Oregon Department of Human Services. I'm honored today to join you and talk about the Earned Income Tax Credit. I think Director Imhold talked about a few things that we do within the Department of Human Services around getting the word out about the Earned Income Tax Credit. But what I really wanted to talk about today and highlight today was a project that we did in Multnomah County this last year around the Earned Income Tax Credit. As you guys already know, as we've just been talking about, populations who would benefit from the Earned Income Tax Credit and other tax credits often do not file taxes and thus do not get access to the benefits of these credits. From July through October 2020, the Department of Human Services, in partnership with Metropolitan Family Services Cash Oregon program, operated an Earned Income Tax Credit pilot project. The contract with MFS was just over $45,000, and the pilot program provided tax navigation services for clients of ODHS with a goal of moving families towards self-sufficiency by maximizing the tax credits they would be eligible for. The first step of the Cash Oregon program was facilitating four webinars for ODHS staff to orient them to tax issues and outline how to refer clients to webinars and other resources. In Multnomah County, a total of 84 staff participated in these webinars. And this next piece, I think I found very interesting. The survey showed that 44% of those staff had not discussed taxes or tax completion with their clients because they had limited knowledge of tax credits and mixed understanding of how tax credits like the EITC and the child tax credits are accessed. So that tells me we've got a lot of work to do with our staff to be sure that they are able to share with the public what the importance of filing their taxes, even when they're not required to do so. The CASH program also set out to facilitate 11 tax navigation webinars designed for ODHS clients. The topics outlined in those webinars included federal and state local taxes, who is required to file taxes, the benefit of filing taxes even if not required, tax credits including the EITC, where and how to file for taxes for free, because of COVID-19, the economic impact payments, and any related technological assistance that was needed to file taxes, as well as financial coaching offered by MFS Economic Empowerment. The disappointing part about these webinars was that we had a very low turnout, only six attendees in total. In hindsight, this is not at all surprising as the webinars were held during the COVID-19 pandemic. And additionally, because of the time of year they got held later in the year, the forest fires of 2020 also had an impact on clients accessing it. As we know, in times of uncertainty and during competing crises, it can be more difficult for those struggling to meet their basic needs to participate in learning opportunities that are outside their normal comfort zone. Additionally, the ODHS staff who were trained to market to participants were redeployed to address the surge of people needing our services, and thus were not able to focus completely on the marketing effort. However, another key and even more successful component of this pilot was the voluntary tax preparation. Offering a no-cost, easy-to-access method to completing a tax return is a vital step in reducing the barriers associated with accessing tax credits. Through the CASH Oregon VITA program, IRS-certified volunteers provided free tax prep over the phone through its innovative volunteer tax prep hotline. During the pilot period, the CASH Oregon program organized 55 volunteers who handled more than 2,100 calls and provided 528 hours of direct one-on-one technical assistance. Clients were asked to complete an optional post-tax survey. 20% of those who participated in the service did participate in the survey, and extrapolating from those numbers, MFS and DHS estimate that the 2019 tax season through this pilot saw more than $49,000 in earned income tax credits coming to Oregonians, another $147,000 in child tax credits, $651,000 in total tax revenue, and a whopping $2.4 million in economic income payments, bringing the total to well over $3 million in tax funds and EIPs to Oregonians. So we know this is a key service, especially this last year as EIPs, those economic income payments, were tied to tax returns. Planning for this pilot began prior to the pandemic, and we are very proud that even though the pandemic happened, like Director Imholt just said, a lot of places closed down, a lot of places didn't provide the services. MFS stepped up and continued to figure out a way to serve our customers during this pilot process. So I can't say enough about them and how great they were during the pandemic to be able to pivot. That pilot project report has been submitted to OLIS, so hopefully that happened earlier today. May not show up in time for this hearing, but it is out there and will be up there soon. And wanted to just take a moment once again to thank my staff in Multnomah County who participated in this pilot, the Metropolitan Family Services, who are absolutely amazing to work with. And thank you guys for giving me an opportunity to be here today to present to you. And I'm happy to take any questions that you guys may have.
Thank you so much, Mr. Vaughn. I'd like to ask very briefly, in addition to CASH Oregon, can you tell us how many other organizations offer free certified tax aid? you know, the real thing, not just going down the street and asking your neighbor, but the people who are the certified, trained, trained to help with taxes, such as AARP Tax Aid. How many of those kinds of organizations are there in Oregon?
Thank you for that question, Chair Nathanson. I actually do not know how many organizations there are in Oregon who provide that service. I do know that in each of our districts around the state, our districts do coordinate with their local free tax agencies to provide that service and provide a link to that service for our families.
Good.
I don't know the actual number.
Thank you. Rep. Pham.
Thank you so much, Chair Nathanson, and thank you, Mr. Hahn. I am very interested in these webinars that you were mentioning to help your clients understand how to take advantage of various tax credits, including or just the tax system, including the earned income tax credit. And I'm concerned about the low attendance, and I'm wondering if you think that it would be helpful to do to get investments in marketing that are, I know that you can kind of push videos now through online advertising. It costs money, but I think it may be, you know, the return on investment to the state may actually justify such an investment. I'm curious your thoughts about kind of using more innovative marketing strategies.
Thank you. Chair Nathanson, Representative Pham, thank you for that question. Yeah, I think, you know, COVID-19 forced us into this webinar world at a time where I don't think we were ready to truly utilize or benefit from it. But I also think COVID-19 taught us how to be better at that over the last year. And so I'd say if we were to rewind a year, yeah, I think there's better marketing that can be done. There's better partnerships that can be done. We are now within the Department of Human Services, and I think Director Imhold from Revenue just said it too, just learning to use social media platforms for marketing, learning to market in a way that is what people see, what they're interested in. And I don't know that government is ever at the cutting edge when it comes to that kind of marketing. We tend to be more in our service world and DHS's service world, more focused on the in-person, come to a classroom, do that. So I think we have a lot to learn about best practices out there around getting our customers to access us through technology and through things like webinars. And I'm hoping we're better prepared to do that in the future moving forward. But we were not prepared pre-COVID to really interact with customers in that way.
Follow-up, Chair Nathanson?
Sure. And then after that question, we're going to move to the next speaker from 211.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Nathanson. And this is actually just more of a clarification. You don't have to answer it, but I wanted to clarify that it's not the webinar format I was asking about, but just the advertising, whether it's in person or in webinar format. I think we do have a lot to learn about some of the new marketing and advertising to promote more participation, whether it's in person or online. And I would be happy to talk more in the future about some of my ideas for how we could spread the word more about this to the people who are eligible. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Pham, and thank you, Mr. Hahn, for being with us.
Thank you guys for the opportunity. Thank you.
Next, we are going to start our presentations from organizations. Each organization will have 5 minutes. We're starting with 211.
Great. Thank you, Representative Nathanson, and to the committee for having us here. My name is Kara Kingas. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm the Director of Partnerships with 211 Info. And I'm also joined by our resource manager, Will Hamill. And we just have a couple of slides to share with you about our participation in the EITC promotion. I don't know if someone has that slide deck available, if it can be seen.
And Kara?
Yes.
Does your presentation start with who you are to just make mm-hmm. sure the committee knows what
yes.
your job is?
Yes.
Not you personally, but 211.
Yes, so 211. Actually, the next slide will cover that information. So if you are unfamiliar with 211, feel free to go on to the next slide. So 211, just like other three-digit numbers that are aware and utilized across the United States, it's an easy-to-remember and commission number by the FCC. It's been in commission since 2000 to help connect communities to local resources based on their zip code. And so when folks aren't sure where to turn, they can dial 211. Our service is a standalone nonprofit that serves the state of Oregon, and we also partner with the Washington 211 system to serve four counties in Southwest Washington. It's free, it's anonymous, and it's confidential. We've been a nonprofit since 2004, and there's been an iteration of an INR or information referral line in the Portland metro area since the 1980s. Our service went statewide in 2013. And so no matter where you are across the state of Oregon, you can dial 211 and get connected to a live agent 7 days a week from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. to get information about community resources. And on the next slide, we'll give you some information about how you can contact us other than calling. Next slide. Well, on the next slide, we have some information about how you can get in touch with us. We have a toll-free number if 211, sometimes it doesn't work on a cell phone or through a business phone. And so what we would do is work with that person's cell phone provider or landline provider to make sure that 211 is programmed like the other three-digit numbers. We also have TTY capabilities, and we have access to an interpretation line with over 240 languages available. We also have about 10 different languages other than English spoken in-house. You can text your zip code to 898-211. You can send an email to help@211info.org. You can search our website at 211info.org. Our entire database is available. And then we have a free mobile app that is available to download on the iPhone and Android platforms. Text and email are available in Spanish and English, and then program hours are based, vary by the program. And then why would you use 211? So some of our top needs here that you can see in our pie chart, the number one reason is always around housing, shelter, help paying rent and mortgage. But you can see there in that pie chart about 7% of our contacts are seeking some sort of financial assistance or help, with bills or something that might be what we call undesignated. They might need help with a gas voucher, or they have some sort of need. And so that's where the tax preparation assistance would fit into this pie chart. And then I'm going to pass it off to Will, who's going to talk about our participation in the EITC awareness program since 2016.
Thanks, Kara, and thanks to the committee again for hearing us. Again, as you can see on this slide, we've made over 8,000 referrals to to tax preparation assistance programs since 2016, when we first joined that interagency EITC group. We are a regular participant in that group as well, meeting every other week during tax season. And some of the outreach efforts we do are both internal. So we send like a one pager and video to our staff each season in late January when tax season is starting. And then we also do outbound messaging to our callers during like wait times, and have posted on social media and newsletters, and have also on our set of demographic questions that we ask each callers. In past years, we've asked if they have filed their taxes for that season. We have not been able to ask that question in the last 2 years, just because during COVID, while our wait time has gone up, we made the decision to take out some questions, and that was part of those. And then also, as part of our involvement in that work group, we're able to provide feedback on how our callers are filing taxes and accessing tax assistance, which has been primarily through Cash Oregon. That's the main partner that we refer to, and then also this year to free tax filing sites. And I think I'll pass it back to Kara just for a conclusion.
For sure. Thanks, Will. Yeah, and so as Will mentioned, we've been heavily promoting the EITC program and just asking that basic question to any of the folks that contact us, you know, have they filed their taxes yet? And we want to get them to the correct information at the right time so that they can have the most money in their pocket that could potentially free up funding for, you know, other bills that they may have. And so if you like what we're doing and what you've been hearing about our involvement with EITC and other services, we have a $3.85 million ask, a budget request in the Oregon Health Authority's budget in the Ways and Means Committee. So feel free to put your hat in the ring for that. We are looking to keep our extended hours and then keep our 9 locally based community engagement coordinators throughout the state, as well as our statewide emergency manager. And so thank you again, Representative Nathanson, for your time and to the committee as well.
Thank you, Kara and Will. Committee, any questions for 211? Could you, very briefly, could you give me an example of what someone would hear in an outbound message related to this?
Sure, yes. When we've had recordings on if someone's waiting on the phone or if they are first dialing into the IVR and they're pressing through the prompts, they might hear a question about, did you know that you might qualify for the earned income tax credit? And then they might hear about the income threshold for a household of 2 or a household of 4. And if they're interested or if they have more questions about where to file their taxes or how to file their taxes, to ask the 211 specialist once they're connected.
That's great. I'm very glad to hear about that. Somewhat in concert with the nature of Rep. Pham's question and comment, I think I'm going to throw my 2 cents in here. Sometimes using bureaucratic words, it can be pretty scary, like, have you filed your tax return? It sounds like, oh my gosh, you know, I don't want to get in trouble with the government. That's, you know, someone's initial reaction, maybe. We have occasionally engaged with people who whose business is public relations and messaging, and asked, well, does it work better if you say, do you know you may have money coming back to you? You know, start out with something completely not scary and not using the word tax in the phrase. So I'm just wondering if you also engage sometimes with consultants to help come up with the right words so as to gain interest, you know, not be misleading, but also not be scary.
Yeah, definitely. We have used very similar language in the past, especially when we've been able to go out in non-pandemic times and present at tabling events and community meetings. We definitely utilize messages where it's not, you know, scary or intimidating, because we know a lot of communities do not have trust in government agencies, and we want to make sure that they are afforded all of the credits that are available to them.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Next, I'd like to hear from Metropolitan Family Service. Oh, actually, Matt, if you would excuse me, I know that we have one speaker with a time constraint. Would you mind delaying for just a moment and we can hear from Oregon Business Council next?
Of course, of course.
Thank you. I'm sorry for that for that problem. Oregon Business Council, you're next.
Well, thank you. Chair Nathanson, vice chairs, committee members, for the record, my name is Kenneth Thrasher. I'm a senior director of the Oregon Business Council, who I'm testifying on behalf of, and Sarah Foster has submitted a paper for you to review on the things I'll be talking about so that you can see that after the meeting. This is a really important time in Oregon because the Oregon Business Council and the Poverty Reduction Task Force have now, with the Opportunity Agenda, for over 8 years has been working on the Earned Income Tax Credit to increase the amounts, to increase the number of people that can access the funding, and also to try to increase the or decrease the cliffs in income when the people pass certain income levels and lose that benefit. So with that effort, we have done quite a bit of work the last year and a half on the earned income tax credit. And when you look at the current opportunity here to try to increase the 73.4% rate of take-up, which we all know right now is probably less than that because of the COVID limitations, we've done quite a bit of analysis on the economic impact. We know that if we could just get to the U.S. average of 78.6% take-up, we would give Oregon families $27 million in ETIC funds. And because of the December and March stimulus funding, they would achieve additional $44 million in stimulus funds. That's $71 million that would go into the Oregon economy. Echo Northwest estimates 1.3 to 1.5 in economic activity. So over $100 million just getting to the U.S. average. By investing, we put in an investment amount of $6 million to consider in trying to move this rate up to 90%. That adds $85 million in ETIC funds to families and $138 million in stimulus funds, $223 million, over $300 million of economic value. And when you consider the cost to Oregon of the 9% contribution rate to ETIC and the administrative cost, we believe this for Oregon would be at least revenue neutral for the state and has a huge economic value for our families at a time of significant need and leveling the playing field for these families and getting them to economic stability. For a family of four, the benefit is $11,400, and that does not include the $1,000 to $1,600 in additional child care credits or child dependent credits that they would pick up under the new law. So there is really a significant impact. And I think as we looked at this whole topic and the issues, we look at it as kind of a short-term, mid-term, long-term strategy, one where we really need to get the pickup rate up right now because of what COVID's done. Longer term, we need to build capacity into the system, and that's at the outreach organizations, many of them are the culturally specific and responsive organizations, to reach out to the families they serve, also to create navigation services to get the information to an increase in tax preparers. And by doing those things, we could increase that pickup rate and increase the value for Oregonians. And long term, by the right structure in this, I think there is an opportunity to look at an opt-out strategy from the current opt-in strategy that we're living with, which where you could really use the resources of the state and others to have this be a much more effective delivery mechanism. But we're not asking for that right now, but we think it should be one element of the overall long-term strategy. So we really believe the House Bill 3373 with the amendment for grants can really help us accomplish that. And with the right structure and organizations put in place, working with our existing providers and expanding those services, we can actually get in close to the 85, 90% rate with a lot of good hard work by the organizations that are already doing a great job serving these wonderful families. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us. Committee, any questions for Mr. Thrasher? Okay, thanks for being with us. Mr. Bartolotti, back to you now.
Great, thank you so much. Good afternoon, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Pham, Vice Chair Rushkey, and members of the committee. I'm Matt Bartolotti, Chief Strategy Officer and Deputy CEO for Metropolitan Family Service in Portland, Oregon. We're a multi-service agency supporting early learning, K-12 academic success, economic empowerment, and older adult services. And our mission is to help people move beyond the limitations of poverty, inequity, and social isolation. We're grateful to be here today, and we're encouraged by the interest of the chair and the co-chair in championing tax justice, and very excited to support the efforts and perspectives of the Department of Revenue and the Department of Human Services. You heard a little bit about one of the pilots we were involved in. We've been interested in supporting economic empowerment and free tax preparation services for several years, and these services have been a major focus for our private fund development and our strategic work. And, you know, we believe that that social services should assess and address economic vulnerabilities alongside core social services. And I'd like to briefly outline some of the barriers that low-income Oregonians face, the ones that we've experienced as a service provider in filing taxes, and provide some perspective on what it's like to provide free tax preparation services in the state. I'm assuming you know a lot of the barriers that people face, and many of them were highlighted by the EITC participatory work group. And we were very encouraged to see that the current bill under consideration and some of the things that were shared so far take those findings into account. And the EITC participatory work group was one of three groups launched last year to look at barriers and innovations in the tax system, but was terminated or called short because of the COVID-19 crisis. But the work group we were on consisted of members from government, tax law, social service providers, and continued to convene through May. And then there were some key findings that were presented about the barriers that low-income tax filers face in completing their taxes. And the key is that there's limited availability. There's about 120 free tax prep sites around the state, most of which are staffed by volunteers, primarily in the AARP and the VITA systems. Trust is limited. Consumers are fearful, with limited culturally responsive and culturally specific organizations providing that essential outreach or navigation and or free tax preparation. Most available free tax preparation is in English, although some of the culturally responsive organizations and some are able to provide services in multiple languages. Taxes are complex and require computational skills. So there's sort of like a social, emotional hurdle to get over before you get into completing your taxes. A lot of low-income filers are scared or really discouraged to participate for multiple complicated reasons. Maybe they haven't filed in the past or something of that sort. So they're afraid. And then the last bit is that a lot of the free file software, well, it's software and requires computers. Internet access and computer literacy. So those are the key barriers that this multi-sector group understand what they're already doing to kind of get at the problem. And just from our current perspective as a tax provider, a free tax provider in the COVID era, we've received 15,000 calls this tax season alone, and we've been able to answer 37% of them. We've completed 1,500 returns and have about 2,000 returns in the queue. And I think, just to give you a sense of what's happening with COVID, I think in the Portland metro region, there's roughly 50 to 60 AARP free tax preparation sites. And right now, well, that was pre-COVID. Right now, there's five that are opening and operating. And then 10% of all the tax inquiries that we've received are asking for help on their 2019 and 2020 returns, which I think is close to triple the normal amount we get. And then pre-COVID, all of our sites did about 8,000 returns. And as I mentioned before, we're hovering around 1,500 at this time. So it's going to be difficult to even reach the numbers that we had been doing pre-COVID. And then in terms of volunteers, which is a critical component of this work, pre-COVID, we had 200 certified volunteers that were active, and right now we've got about 80. And we've done a lot of innovation around creating a call center, a hybrid kind of in-person direct service, DHS pilot, similar to that. So the picture I'm painting now is that we're challenged to meet the needs that were currently, or that were in place before COVID, and right now we're doing everything that we can in bringing as many resources forward to meet the current need. So we're extremely excited and honored to be part of this conversation today, and grateful to see interest from the chair and co-chair and the agencies that spoke today, the state agencies that spoke. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us. Maya Family Center is next.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Pham, Vice Chair Reske, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is William Miller.
I'm Blackfeet and Cherokee, and I have the honor of representing the Native American Youth and Family Center. And before I continue, I just want to congratulate Representative Valderrama. NAYA was founded by the community for the community. The NAYA Family Center is made up of numerous tribes and voices who are rooted in sustaining tradition while building cultural wealth. We provide culturally specific programs and services that guide our people in the direction of personal success and balance through cultural empowerment. Our continuum of life services creates a wraparound, holistic, healthy environment that's youth-centered, family-driven, and elder-guided, which is why I have the honor of speaking in support of this today. The NAYA Family Center has provided a free tax service to members of our community for the better part of 10 years. As Matt mentioned just a bit ago, the EITC work group, which completed in May of 2020, or had to complete, if you will, because of COVID, recommended investments which should be made to culturally specific or competent organizations to provide tax file support in languages other than English, by trusted partners and at trusted community hubs. What ultimately led NAYA to disbanding our tax services was the lack of continued funding provided to support these services. Over 10 years, we served thousands of community members in accessing free tax services and support. Increased funding and supports by way of this legislation or increased funding would continue to allow community-based organizations such as NAYA the opportunity to support clients through tax preparation and advocacy. We see this time and time again. It's so important to our community, specifically BIPOC community, where access to these vital resources is very, very critical. So we have the honor of asking your support today, and thank you for the opportunity to come and speak with you. We look forward to a continued partnership.
Thank you for your testimony. Committee members, any questions for the last couple of speakers before I move to the final speaker? Okay. NeighborWorks, Rep. Pham.
Thank you so much, Chair Nathanson. I did want to just follow up on Mr. Miller's comment about the lack of funding. I wanted to know more about what happened that caused the funding to disappear for NAYA's tax prep services.
Chair Nathanson, Pham, thank you for the question. From my understanding, the funding ran out. There wasn't a continued source of funding to provide the services in order to then continue providing services to the community. So I really think it came down to a funding mechanism. And so, like I said, increased funding to these programs is really, really vital in terms of accessing these resources.
I'm going to ask it a little more directly. Where did the money come from, and what exactly did it pay for? Was it a staff position, or was there also some software or telecommunications stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not entirely sure the source of the funding, and Chair Nathanson, Representative Pham, I'm happy to get that data over to you after this. What I do know is it was funded through, was sort of passed through, through a hub as described, and NAYA was we provided staffing and volunteers, and it was really a community-led effort to ensure that these resources were being afforded to our community.
Thank you. Rep. Pham, we might get some more information later.
Thank you very much.
NeighborWorks.
Hi, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Michelle Martin, and I am the Director of Community and Economic Empowerment for NeighborWorks Umpqua, a community development organization in Southern Oregon area that serves seven counties in the Southern Oregon communities. We have been operating our tax program. We have a VITA program for the past, this is our fourth year in operation. And being able to kind of round out this meeting, I went ahead and I got on to our site and took a look. And right now, the numbers that Matt shared with you earlier, right now we have 17 AARP sites in Oregon, and only 3 VITA sites out of the 120 that were pre-COVID. So COVID took a had a huge impact on our communities and their ability to be able to provide free tax assistance. We saw closures, significant limitations. We had folks coming to us this season and throughout this last year for the economic stimulus checks. And we actually saw phone calls coming from other states of folks who found that we were helping people and they just needed to be able to file their non-filer status to be able to gain those EIP payments. Access to technology and broadband is a huge issue in our rural communities. And we see this affecting the ability of folks to be able to even access the free tax software where they could do their own tax programs. Unemployment has had a significant impact on our tax programs this year, and folks not understanding the impacts of not having taxes withheld out of their unemployment this past year has made for some very interesting conversations with our community members as they come in for that tax assistance. We were fortunate enough this last year, because we are a community development corporation, with our tax program to be awarded a financial education and asset building award from the IRS, in that we have conversations with our taxpayers as they come in, much like MFS does with their taxpayers, about the importance of really looking at what they're having taken out of their paychecks and making sure that they're keeping enough in their pockets to be able to manage the day-to-day space. And you know, being able to have those conversations and really look at things like the benefits cliff and when their children age out of the child tax credit system, what does that do to their returns that they've been counting on every year to catch bills up and such. It is really important work that we do across the region. And COVID this past year has had a significant impact on our ability to do that work. It also, it will take many hands to be able to make a change in this system as we move forward. And the collaboration that has already been in place this past year, despite COVID and all of the changes that kind of took us a little bit sideways this past year, you can see that the team that's here in front of you is really very passionate about making sure that we are providing for our community and we are bringing the money into our community so that we can have a community that is vital and resilient and can withstand all of the craziness that we've seen this past year. So we really appreciate your time in being able to bring this information to you. And I know that everyone here that has presented would be more than happy to share any additional information as needed to really guide this conversation. I know for our site in 3 years in Coos and Douglas County only, that's where our sites were for the first 3 years. We had we saw nearly $500,000 in EITC and child tax credits come back into that community. Our population base in those two counties is significantly elderly, which tells us we have a lot of seniors, grandparents who are taking care of their grandchildren or raising their families and parents that are not able to provide. And having access to that earned income tax credit and having them understand that they qualify for that service is something that is really vital to the economic resilience of our community and the population base that we serve specifically.
Thank you. Ms. Martin, would you repeat for me that number that you said? Was it $500,000 that came back in?
$500,000 in earned income tax credit and child tax credit in Coos and Douglas County over the past 3 years.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Committee members, any questions? This completes our list of witnesses for the informational meeting. You know, I really appreciated everyone's information. One thing that was driven home for me by Ms. Martin, Mr. Miller, Mr. Bartolotti in particular, is people need especially right now, in the past year, with the pandemic and the wildfires, people need more help. There are more people that need help, and there are fewer people available to help them because of those same situations that have arisen. This is a really, this is really distressing to hear. But I'm so glad you're with us today to let us know what's going on and let us give some more thought to what an appropriate response might be. Last words from the committee before we close this informational meeting. Again, thank you to all of the presenters. I'm closing this informational meeting. Next, we have a public hearing. Before I open the public hearing, I'd like to ask if the sponsor of the bill is available yet.
Madam Chair, she does appear to, well, she was in the room a minute ago.
Committee, we're going to stand at ease for maybe just as little as a minute or so till we figure it out, and then we'll open the public hearing on the bill.
Broadcasting.
Thank you. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 3373, LRO.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3373 establishes the Office of Taxpayer Advocacy in the Department of Revenue. The bill requires the department to help taxpayers understand the policies and procedures available to them while resolving problems. It also outlines the process for establishing procedures to protect the confidentiality of taxpayers. Additionally, it has sections dealing with the tax court to deal with attorney fees in the cases of court orders and also involving transit self-employment taxes. And this takes effect on the 91st day following adjournment signing day.
Thank you. Representative Fahey, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, for the record, I am Julie Fahey, representing House District 14, which includes West Eugene, Junction City, and parts of rural Lane County. I'm here today in support of House Bill 3373, establish a taxpayer advocate office in the Department of Revenue. This idea of a taxpayer advocate came to my attention when my office was working with a constituent to address a pretty complex and difficult tax case. That situation reinforced to me that there is a need for resources within the department dedicated to working with taxpayers and ensuring that tax law is being implemented fairly. As it turns out, this idea is fairly common across the country. 34 states, the District of Columbia, and the federal IRS have some form of a taxpayer advocate or ombudsperson. While there is a variation amongst the different offices, they all address the same problem. Our tax system is complex. We have likely all heard from constituents and from advocates about how that complexity puts barriers in the way of Oregonians navigating the tax system. People who need to understand which resources are available to them, who want to appeal a decision, are undergoing an audit, have concerns about their treatment, or even people who don't regularly file a tax return and leave money on the table that they'd be eligible for through programs like the EITC. A taxpayer advocate office could help the department serve Oregonians better. In addition to working directly with taxpayers, the taxpayer advocate would be charged with identifying policies that are barriers to equitable treatment and representing taxpayers' interests in internal decision-making. I'll be clear that this will not give taxpayers endless opportunities to contest decisions that they feel are wrong or to avoid paying the taxes that they owe. Instead, it's another line of communication between the state and taxpayer, and we'll hold that communication to the boots. My office has a conversation with the several conversations with the department and Director Imholt, and they have expressed strong interest in this idea and a willingness to work on this concept to ensure that it's effective and promotes equity in our taxes. Lastly, this bill also contains another idea that came out of work with a constituent. Currently, when a taxpayer appeals their case to tax court and wins, the circumstances under which they can recover attorney's fees are quite narrow. House Bill 3373 makes two very small changes to laws governing when attorney's fees are awarded. First, it includes cases that are in the magistrate division in a narrow category of cases where the court can award attorney's fees because the opposing party is found to have willfully disobeyed a court order or there was no objectively reasonable basis for their claim. Currently, cases in the magistrate division are never eligible for attorney's fees. Second, it also adds self-employment taxes as a category of taxes for which the court may award attorney's fees. Currently, attorney fees may only be awarded in cases related to income, inheritance, and property taxes. So this bill would add self-employment taxes as a category of taxes as well. I recognize the attorney's fees is quite complex and technical section of law. Our office has done a fair amount of analysis about when attorney's fees can and can't be awarded. So those are the two things that came out of that analysis. Thanks again for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Committee, any questions for Representative Fahey before the representative returns to another committee meeting? Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Fahey, thanks for bringing this bill forward. Great idea. And you mentioned that 34 other states do something like this. My only concern is how big does this get? Are we talking about one person? Or are we talking about an office that then holds 100 people? I'm just wondering about it spiraling out of control and what kind of model we'd be using going forward.
Chair Nathanson, Representative Reschke, thank you for that question. The bill does sort of spell out what that might look like, and I'm trying to access that specific language. But I believe the Department of Revenue will be testifying as well about how they are envisioning that piece. So I don't have access right offhand to the number of FTE that we are talking about here. It's definitely not 100, but perhaps the department could speak to that more with more detail.
All right, thank you, Representative, and thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions for Rep. Fahey? Thanks for being with us. You're
thank
welcome
you.
To stay, and we recognize you probably need to leave.
Thank you so much.
We have several other speakers in the list of witnesses. We should have plenty of time for everybody to talk. If you could hold your comments to about 3 minutes each, that would allow plenty of time for everyone to speak and time for a few questions, if any questions arise. I'll list the first few so you know where you are in the list. Betsy Imholt is first, followed by Cody Trudell, then Scott Bruin, and then Kenneth Thrasher. So first, Betsy Imholt.
Hi, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Betsy Imholt, Director of the Oregon Department of Revenue, and I'm here before you today to testify in support of House Bill 3373 and also in support of the Dash 1 Amendment. Cody Trudell is here with me today. She'll just help me answer questions. I don't think you'll need to call on her separately. House Bill 3373 creates a taxpayer advocate office in the Department of Revenue. And this office would be a public-facing office that gives taxpayers an additional place to bring issues to the department's attention. This does not replace or supplant any of the appeals processes that exist at the tax court or otherwise. This is in addition to and not instead of the rights that taxpayers have today. Since joining the department in August, it has become clear to me that if a taxpayer has a complaint, they bring it to me. But the problem is I have no resources to investigate or follow up on the matter other than to take it to the very program to which it, from which it came from. The good news is I don't receive many complaints. Actually, the converse is true. I actually receive a lot of compliments about our staff's interactions with taxpayers. But there is no meaningful way to challenge ourselves, to identify themes, to track cross-agency issues, and to maximize taxpayer input for the purpose of getting better. Most states, as you heard, have a taxpayer advocate function. This was really big in the 90s, and it just bypassed us. There's been many attempts in the past, and frankly, I don't think the department was too fond of it. I think it's one of the reasons that it's never happened. In January, we started a taxpayer advocate program project here where I borrowed staff from ODOT's Office of Civil Rights to help us look at the research nationwide, what's going on in these other offices across the state, and also the very robust taxpayer advocate office that exists at the IRS so that we could glean best practices and scope how this could really best fit in Oregon. Creating a taxpayer office elevates the voice of the taxpayer, and that's really what I'm interested in. It would allow us to more effectively incorporate their perspective into our processes and into our decisions. I think that we try to do that, but we don't really have the best focal point in which to do so. In addition to serving as an office to help taxpayers navigate the department at their request, I also envision this office being more than that. This office could be the hub for our consultation with community-based organizations about our outreach, language access, tax help, and other conversations and relationships that lead to voluntary compliance. And voluntary compliance is the cornerstone of effective tax administration. We know that if we can get people to voluntarily comply with tax submission, that reduces all of our other costs. So we support the -1 amendment to this bill because it creates and adds this grant making authority to this office. And this is where, just piggybacking on the conversation that we had earlier today, we really believe that this office could be a place where we really host a grant making function where we could really partner with community-based organizations to offer this tax help service that we were just talking about earlier today. Just want to thank Representative Fahey and her staff for working on this proposal, and also our coalition of partners for joining us in this effort. We're open to making sure that we get it right. I don't know that we're quite there yet. There's probably a little bit of tweaking to do, but I'm also happy to join anyone in that effort and happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Committee, any questions for Ms. Imholt? Rep. Reschke, for example.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Imholt, thank you for your testimony. I guess I'll ask the same question I asked Representative Fahey, which was how large do you expect the rollout of this office to be? Is it one FTE? Is it 10? Is it 100?
It's 4. And I don't think that's 4. Actually the rollout. Okay. I think that's like the real, that's like, for me, that's the ideal staffing level is 4. I will tell you, in some of the states that we've looked at, they are, it's a faux taxpayer advocate office. They have one half-time person, and I would rather not do it if that's how it would look. If we're going to do this, I would actually want to be able to really do it. And I think it would take 4 people.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Any other questions for Ms. Imholt? Okay, and I'm going to skip over Cody Trudell. assuming that's okay. And the next will be Scott Bruin, followed by Kenneth Thrasher.
Great. Well, Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, my name is Scott Bruin. I am the Director of Tax and Fiscal Policy for Oregon Business and Industry. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of House Bill 3373. The concept of a public taxpayer advocate office in Oregon has been around for a while, and we have seen at both the federal level through the IRS's advocate system, as well as advocate systems set up in numerous other states, just how necessary and vital a system like this can be. Oregon's tax system is not simple. Our tax laws are complex and often arcane. Full compliance, even with the absolute best of intentions and efforts on the part of taxpayers, can be difficult. This is nobody's fault. This is just the nature of taxes. We believe that an important part of good government is making sure that laws are simple, logical, and as easy to follow as possible. Ignorance of law is not an excuse for avoiding or misconstruing the law. Still, government should do its level best to make sure our laws are workable and understandable. Yet tax laws, by their very nature, create unique challenges in this regard. This is why a taxpayer advocate's office is so important. The Oregon Taxpayer Advocate Office would serve as an independent and confidential resource for Oregon taxpayers. The office would serve taxpayers by helping communicate policies, rules, and procedures. It would help reduce misunderstandings and resolve compliance problems, and it would help give options when other remedies have been exhausted. Done right, the office will work to create and build trust with Oregon taxpayers who are challenged by the complexities and the demands of our tax system. In short, it will work to help taxpayers resolve issues for the benefit of themselves and the state. Madam Chair, Committee, we fully support House Bill 3373. It is an excellent first step in the right direction. There are, however, some things we would like to see added to make it even better. First, we believe that small business should be expressly named in the bill as a taxpaying entity entitled to use the advocate's office. Second, similar to what a few other states do, we would like the new office to provide, based on the experiences gained by working with diverse Oregon taxpayers, recommendations on needed changes to Oregon's tax policies and procedures. It's one thing to help taxpayers negotiate challenges. It's quite another to actually help reduce or eliminate those challenges. Toward this, the Taxpayers Advocate Office would be in a uniquely advantageous position to offer recommendations for positive reform. Let me conclude by simply noting the truism that the only thing certain in life are death and taxes, and so is the anxiety that both can cause. House Bill 3373 is an important tool to make our tax system better by helping to actually reduce the anxieties that taxes can cause, and we urge your support. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for the testimony. Kenneth Thrasher.
This is Sarah Foster from the Oregon Business Council on behalf of Ken. He had to leave at 4 p.m., as you know, earlier. So I will be testifying on behalf of him for the Oregon Business Council. I'm currently the Director of Health and Social Policy for the Oregon Business Council and lead our poverty reduction work. We support House Bill 3373, in particular, an amendment that establishes a grant program that supports a sustainable funding source for culturally specific and responsive organizations to do the much needed tax prep. The Oregon Business Plan's long-standing vision and strategic framework for economic development with leading edge traded sector companies as the engine is necessary but insufficient. The strategy has produced well-paying jobs and good living standards for those who can access them, but too many Oregonians have been left behind, especially communities of color and those living in rural communities. In fact, recent economic analysis show that job growth by itself does not foster economic mobility, and in some places, job growth has amplified economic disparities across racial and geographic divides. It's imperative that OBC supports an agenda that focuses on Oregonians being left behind by a traditional economic strategy. One of the mechanisms in which we see an incredible opportunity to close this racial wealth gap is the earned income tax credit. As many of the panelists pointed out in the information session, Oregon ranks in the bottom of the pack in EITC uptake. Many of those same partners identified barriers to this uptake, including language, geography, and trust, that limits Oregonians' ability to file returns. Through our partnerships with culturally specific and responsive organizations, we've also been made aware of the lack of sustainable funding for our CBOs to do this really important work. If Oregon were to increase its EIC uptake rate from the current 73% to the national average of 78%, families would have access to $27 million in EITC funds. And we think with a sustainable funding source, we can get to 90%, which gets low-income families access to $85 million in funds. The current network of culturally specific and responsive providers is well established, but under-resourced to get to the national average and beyond. Sustainable funding for culturally specific and responsive organizations to do this important tax prep is imperative to help families have access to the EITC and other tax credits available to them. EITC and other tax credits have the opportunity to cut child poverty in half, but only if Oregonians have access to the resources to file taxes and access these funds. So thank you, Representative Nathanson, for the opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 3373, in particular an amendment that establishes a much needed funding source for culturally specific and responsive organizations to do this important tax prep work.
Thank you for the testimony. The next two speakers will be Nikki Dobe and Alicia Temple. First, Nikki Dobe.
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nikki Dobe, and I am here today to testify regarding House Bill 3373. I'm here today on my own capacity. I am a state and local tax attorney with 15 years experience, and I'm a partner with the law firm of Evershed Sutherland. I would like to support and provide comments in support of the concept of a taxpayer's advocate office in Oregon, but I am not currently supporting the bill as drafted, so I will be testifying on a neutral basis. I've been working with the folks from the Department of Revenue and have shared these concerns with the department as well, and will continue to work with them and provide them comments to strengthen this bill going forward. Again, from the perspective of the practitioner, a taxpayer's advocate office would be very welcome. It's seen as a very good thing. Specifically, the IRS program is the gold standard. It is well-funded. It operates very independently of the IRS, and the taxpayer advocate does have independent authority to truly assist taxpayers. I've also seen and worked with effective taxpayer advocates in other states. Specifically, the California Franchise Tax Board has a very effective taxpayer advocate's office. They do things such as hold public meetings once a year to provide anybody to come forward and offer suggestions for the department, and are just generally extremely helpful when taxpayers need somewhere to turn. Thus, I would urge the committee to support the concept of an effective taxpayers advocate office. As drafted, however, the provisions that relate to the taxpayers advocate in House Bill 3373 are insufficient. It does not appear to provide a funding mechanism, which I think is key. And further, it does not grant the taxpayers advocate with sufficient independence. Thus, I would encourage the committee to consider strengthening this proposal and understand that an amendment is to be proposed. The taxpayers advocate office should be given true independence from the department and the director, including creating a committee that would appoint the taxpayers advocate and providing the taxpayers advocate with independent authority to effectuate change for taxpayers. Again, very supportive of the concept generally, and will continue to work with the Department of Revenue to strengthen House Bill 3373. I appreciate your time and attention to this bill, and I'm happy to provide any answers for questions you might have with the work I've done in other states with respect to the Taxpayer Advocate's Office.
Representative Pham.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, and thank you, Mr. Bay, for your testimony. Can you clarify what you mean by that if, you know, you would recommend changes that would give the taxpayer advocate authority to effectuate change for taxpayers? How would that work?
Madam Chair, Rep. Pham, as currently drafted, the bill requires the taxpayer advocate to go to the director in order to effectively get sign-off to do something. The IRS program, however, gives the taxpayer advocate independent authority to help taxpayers when needed. So we would just like to see, or I would just recommend, that the taxpayer advocate be given authority to actually act independently on her or his own behalf without having to get permission from the director's office.
Sure. So just to clarify, you when you said effectuate change for taxpayers, you were not talking about tax policy. You're saying to actually help them with the tax return or things like that, they would actually just be able to do whatever they need to do without having to get sign off from their supervisors, from the department?
Chair Nathanson, Rep. Pham, yes, I'm not talking about changing policies within the department. I'm talking about if a specific taxpayer comes with a problem, so, you know, maybe there's a payment issue or they're not able, they are just not going to be able to pay the bill and they'd like to provide some sort of settlement, this would just give the taxpayer advocate independent authority to resolve that issue with respect to that taxpayer. And this is an authority that, again, the IRS taxpayers advocate has. And I've seen this also with the Franchise Tax Board's Taxpayer Advocates Office in California.
Thank you for that clarification.
Ms. Dobay, would that make the position a little bit like an administrative law judge, where on behalf of an agency's policies and processes and procedures, they may make a determination about what someone does or it doesn't need to do?
Madam Chair, I would not say that the taxpayers' advocates I've seen in other states kind of reach that level of an ALJ. Most of the issues that they're dealing with are usually very small tax issues, but they are often able to resolve them in a manner that is kind of outside the general policies of the department or the appeals process. So I don't see this as providing somebody with unlimited authority or authority to kind of go out and do whatever they would like. I think that the folks that generally serve in these positions are very responsible and respect the policies of the agency. They're really just there to help in those situations when there's just not a lot of other options that are available. So that's when I've seen them work most effectively, is where you've got a taxpayer where they don't have any more appeal rights. They've just got nowhere else to turn. And this person has been able to help them resolve a specific issue.
Thank you. And I appreciate that you're working with the department. I'm going to assume you're also working with the sponsor of the bill, who is responsible for having written the bill and making sure that you're keeping the sponsor in the loop with your suggestions.
Happy to do so. Thank you.
Any other questions for Ms. Dobay? Alicia Temple.
Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Alicia Temple, and on behalf of the Oregon Law Center, I am testifying today in support of House Bill 3373. With the amendment, this bill seeks to solve two important problems. And I know you've already heard a little bit, and you'll continue to hear about the need for community support and outreach to help communities file their taxes. So I'd like to testify briefly about the taxpayer advocate portion, which OLC believes will help our clients and ultimately bolster the effects of the community outreach. Having a taxpayer advocate in the Department of Revenue would make a significant difference for legal aid clients. Working with low-income individuals and families, we have witnessed that there is a pervasive fear of the Department of Revenue and of taxes. Our clients often view it as monolithic and unknowable. They are afraid that that this agency is just out to take their money, and they just don't really understand how it works, because as others have said, taxes are really complicated. They believe there is no pathway to help or payment plans if they owe money, and this can create real hesitancy to file taxes when it isn't absolutely necessary, even though we all know there may be benefits to filing taxes, like qualifying for the earned income tax credit. One way to encourage low-income communities to file their taxes and to offer help to those who have filed and now have concerns is to increase the transparency and trust in the Department of Revenue. Creating an Office of Taxpayer Advocates is a good way to do that. The IRS has a similar office that our tax clinic has had great success with and thinks is crucial to helping improve our tax processes. One key to a successful tax advocate, which the prior speaker just addressed as well, is that while it's housed within Department of Revenue, that we ensure it has a significant amount of independence and authority. Getting this dynamic right will be an important part of the ability of the office to truly be of service to Oregonians who need help. Thanks so much for your time and your support of House Bill 3373 and the Dash 1 Amendment.
Thank you for your testimony. Committee, questions for Ms. Temple or any of the other prior speakers who might still be in the room? I'm not seeing any questions. That has concluded our list of witnesses for today. Committee, any other points you want to raise while we're in public hearing on House Bill 3373? Okay, I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 3373. Thank you, everybody who testified today, and for anyone remaining with us in the room who was here for the informational meeting, thank you again to all of you. Mr. Alanak, any final thoughts or information for us?
Just that tomorrow continues a series of informational meetings this week, and tomorrow will be another panel of state agencies talking about the data that they collect and use and about data-driven decision-making.
Thank you. Committee, any last words before we close this meeting? Okay, we're adjourned. Thank you.